From South Dakota Public Broadcasting, this is your SDPB News Podcast. I'm Jackson Dirks in Pierre. Today in the state's capital, debates over rural health transformation funds, governor-controlled dollars, and legislative priorities are coming into shape. We'll also talk sports with this week's Your Morning in Play. It's Thursday, January 22nd. Here are today's stories. Proponents say the federal Rural Health Transformation Program could result in generational change in South Dakota, but some lawmakers bristled over what they perceived as a loss of control over the state's purse strings. The executive branch offered stern words for the Joint Appropriations Committee to keep the time-sensitive process moving. SDPB's Jackie Hendry reports.
The federal program offers states a baseline of $100 million a year for the next 5 years, with additional funds awarded based on an application process. South Dakota received $189 million for this fiscal year, with the next round of funds announced in the fall based on early results. The Department of Health says it needs more than only this year's spending authority to prevent contract delays, prompting a lengthy debate over budgetary timelines and how the amount of spending authority is determined. Senator John Carley of Piedmont was among lawmakers who resisted uncertain numbers. He says it's a matter of responsibility.
This is for the elected officials to decide and look at each year, not to turn over 2 years worth of guesses. This is a guessed number, to turn that over with an unknown number. So do you want to cede that authority and give that up, or do you want to have the ability to look at it next year, see what we got, and then approve those funds next year? I would suggest you shouldn't cede that authority.
Others, like Representative Chris Kasson of Vermilion, argued against anything that jeopardizes additional funding for rural health initiatives.
My responsibility is the constituents of District 17 who pay federal tax dollars. They file their income tax and they pay. I can't go back to them and look them in the eye and say, hey, because today I voted to do something that maybe could cost our state and those taxpayers, they're receiving their money back. This money's already been allocated. We can't give it back.
After an hour of debate and a brief recess, Lieutenant Governor Tony Venhuizen addressed the committee he once co-chaired. He says there's nothing to fear from granting spending authority for more money than is ultimately awarded.
You're losing the forest for the trees, and before you consider this series of amendments, I would ask you to take a step back and think about that. This is too important. We need to get this done.
The appropriators ultimately approved spending authority for the first 2 years of the program. The bill still needs approval from the full House before advancing to the Senate. I'm SDPB's Jackie Hendry in Pierre.
Democrats and Republicans alike are grappling with how to handle a fund that only the governor has the power to disperse taxpayer dollars from. The Employers Investment in South Dakota's Future Fund, more commonly referred to as the Future Fund, has an uncertain path forward. Legislators are asking for more oversight into the dollars following expenditures by former Governor Kristi Noem some lawmakers questioned. The most recent effort is Senate Bill 1, which requires the Governor's Office of Economic Development to create rules around the fund. All disbursements must be approved by the state's Board of Economic Development, a board fully appointed by the governor. That bill is currently stuck in the Senate State Affairs Committee following a tie vote due to one excused committee member. Governor Larry Rodin also passed an executive order to place guardrails on the fund he controls. However, executive orders can be undone and are not codified law, which some legislators want accomplished. Democrat Senate Minority Leader Liz Larson says it's time to collaborate on the issue between SB 1 and the governor's executive order.
Those are both attempts to put on guardrails. So I'm calling all sides to listen to each other. You're going to have to give a little bit and come up with a reasonable solution to this that we can all get behind. And the consequences, if they don't, could be quite dire for governors in the future. This is a pretty big economic development tool that we have and that we've been able to avail in the past. And I think we should all, you know, have the civil conversation that ends in some type of compromise.
Some believe a compromise is on the table for the supermajority Republican-led legislature. That includes Assistant Majority Leader Representative Marty Overweg. He says he likes the governor's executive order, but wants the legislature to have some oversight, pointing to boards like the Board of Internal Controls.
As a legislative body, we need legislative oversight to where the people's money is going. And I don't think that's too much to ask. It's our job. And the three branches have to work separate so we can work together. And I said in committee, just because something's successful, that's not an excuse to not do something right. So I think we're going to come to a compromise. I think we're going to get something passed this year. I've got good feelings. Is it this bill? I don't know, but I do believe we will.
The chair of the Senate State Affairs Committee says SB 1 should be heard soon. I'm SDPB's Jackson Dirks in Pierre. As session marches on, the shape of South Dakota's 2026 year in politics becomes clearer by the day. Legislative leaders say there's still a long road ahead. SDPB's CJ Keene has more.
The budget, property taxes, and affordability are all major talking points across the state, but that's only the tip of the iceberg. Senate Assistant Majority Leader Carl Perry says lawmakers have a lot on their plates 2 weeks in.
We're up to 1,022 drafts, and that's more than normal. And for bills in the House is leading the Senate by a mere 3 votes. They have 111 bills, and we have 108 bills for a total of 219. So we are very busy.
It makes for a docket filled with varying priorities and competing interests, according to Senate Majority Leader Jim Melhoff.
And obviously, your property tax, economic development, election integrity is always a big one. I think we'll be seeing a lot of bills like that in state affairs. Government transparency, we've already took up some of those. The Attorney General brought for open meeting laws and to prohibit foreign nationals from participating or contributing to candidates.
Meanwhile, Democratic leadership counterparts like Senate Minority Leader Liz Larson come up with their own list of goals for 2026.
Under this umbrella, we'll be pushing from both in the front and from behind the scenes, addressing food security, out-of-school care, school lunches for children. We'll be advocating to keep public dollars in public education and preserving Medicaid. And we'll be fighting for against the 0% raise across the big three, of course. And we'll be watching SNAP and TANF closely, given the social services cuts to SNAP and unnecessary cuts to TANF without real legislative approval. We will be prioritizing people.
All the while, the governor's budget left over $14 million unallocated dollars for lawmakers to consider throughout the session. I'm SDPB's CJ Keene in Pierre.
Senate Majority Leader Jim Melhoff has previously compared keeping his Republican caucus on side to herding wild cats. Now, with several lawmakers temporarily out due to personal or health reasons, it's become an even tighter margin in key debates.
Sometimes you're just not going to get a consensus on a bill. You'll probably see a lot of 18-17 votes or 18-16 with one absent or a couple absent this session, and you just don't get married to your bills. Work hard. If you don't get it done, try again.
Melhoff says the game plan now is to keep legislative decorum front of mind.
And there is a lot of diversity of thought. I often joke that there's many caucuses within my caucus, and I don't lead any of them. But I think the key thing that we always have to remember is that everybody is here and everybody has best interests of their constituents in mind when they bring proposals forward.
One of those wedge issues will be the incoming property tax debate over the Capitol this year. South Dakota Highway Patrol officials says they're continuing to face staffing issues in some parts of the state. That's according to testimony at a House Transportation Committee meeting. Bob Perry is Secretary of the Department of Public Safety. He says of the Highway Patrol's 23 openings, most are in rural areas West River. He says postings in bigger cities like Sioux Falls are not hard to fill, but openings in rural communities can go unfilled for months. Last year, the patrol started recruiting 2 classes a year instead of 1 to make it easier to hire more troopers.
Legislative coverage on SDPB is supported by the South Dakota Bar Foundation, SDN Communications, Missouri River Energy Services, and your membership in the Friends of SDPB. Thank you.
Federal drug authorities say South Dakota is following a national trend in seeing more fentanyl powder, but a decrease in counterfeit pills. That's according to a new report from the Drug Enforcement Administration. It says the state saw a 43% increase in fentanyl powder seizures in 2025, but that was roughly matched by a 41% decrease in counterfeit pill seizures. The DEA says this is part of a shift from drug cartels. It's cheaper and easier for them to distribute powder versus pills. The report also says agents also saw a rise in methamphetamine and cocaine seizures in South Dakota last year. In this week's Your Morning in Play, a recent matchup of high school basketball rivals in Northeast South Dakota came loaded with an extra layer of intrigue. Good morning, this is Your Morning in Play. I'm SDPB's Jackson Dirks with sports content producer Nate Weck.
How's it going, Jackson?
It's good. How about you, Nate?
Doing well.
So tell us a little bit about what you've been working on lately and what's been going on.
Yeah, so last week in the high school basketball world, there was a game that took place up in Aberdeen. It was the Aberdeen Central boys hosting the Watertown Arrows boys. Now, from the surface, it looks like another, you know, conference game. It's a two class AA teams kind of going at it. But when you dig deeper, the head coach for the Watertown Arrows is a man by the name of Pat McClemens. Now, his son is Colton McClemens, and he's currently in his first year as the head coach of Aberdeen Central. So the matchup obviously had a lot of family appeal to it, just because it's father and son, you know, both head coaches going against each other and all that. But at the same time, Colton's oldest brother is also a senior on the Watertown Arrows team this year, Jackson McClemens. So kind of a family affair. Mom Patty is also the high school principal for Watertown, right? So, I mean, there's just all of these McClemens connections kind of all over the place for that matchup last week. It did see Watertown get the win. Watertown's had an impressive start to the year. 8-1 start. They won just 6 games a year ago. So to start 8-1 this year, Pat McClemens has his team rolling pretty good, and there's some exciting matchups on the horizon too that'll tell us a little bit more about the Arrows and things like that. And a little bit different start for Aberdeen Central. It's been a little bit tougher year for the boys team there, but there's a lot of support for what Colton McClemens is trying to create there. He's also got a lady by the name of Dawn Seiler as the athletic director there, who's one of the most successful girls basketball coaches in state history up in Aberdeen. So there are people within the system too that Colton can bounce ideas off of and things like that, that I think pave the way for a brighter future and things like that that are trying to be pushed for up there. So, but yeah, at the end of the day, you know, it's just two, you know, it's one game. These teams will meet twice this year, but yes, pretty special. You know, we've seen father-son connections throughout the state before. I don't know of how many times I've seen father-son coaches duel against each other in a game. So I did think that was pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. So tell me a little bit about it and what happened and some of the stuff that you saw there.
Yeah, so one of the things that, you know, I talked to both coaches about was, what was the pregame like? You know, what was the handshake line, right? Like at the end of the game, right? Because those are the things you kind of want to know. And the handshake line was pretty quick, you know, good game, you know, we'll talk later type of thing. You know, at the end of the day, you know, both coaches said, you know, yeah, it was cool for us on a personal level. But at the end of the day, it's high school basketball, and it's about amplifying the experience for the kids, right? It's all, you know, high school sports. That's what high school sports and activities, it's all about the kids that are participating in it and trying to challenge them and get them on overcoming those challenges, guiding them, you know, seeing them develop and things like that. So at the end of the day, that's what their individual goals are and things like that. So, you know, they did talk a little bit before the game, but yeah, that handshake line was pretty quick, and it was mostly just, hey, we'll talk later type of thing. But yeah, there's a lot of respect there between those two, obviously, as father and son. And, you know, Pat McClemens will even go watch, when Aberdeen Central played T Area earlier this year, Pat McClemens went and watched that game, just because he wanted to support his son. So they're still, even though they're technically competitors, right? They're in the same class, they're in the same conference. There's still that Pat McClemens wants to see his son Colton succeed.
Hmm. I guess, is there anything else you think we should have our eye on as the season continues and as we're moving along?
You know, from a basketball perspective, the one thing I'm looking for with Watertown is, you know, how are they? They haven't played any of the Sioux Falls Metro yet. They haven't played Huron yet. There's some good teams out of there. So it'll be interesting to see how Watertown goes through that, and we'll get a better read on, you know, the Watertown Arrows team as a whole. It'll also be interesting to just watch Aberdeen Central throughout the year and see how they continue to progress and see where they're at the end of the season. You know, Watertown and Aberdeen, they will meet up one more time this season as well. They play twice. They've played once already, so they've got one more game that they'll play each other. I believe that game's in February here sometime, and that one will be in Watertown. So that's sort of a 30-foot view of the situation.
This has been your Morning in Play. And that's your daily news update. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, X, and YouTube at SDPB News, and visit sdpb.org/news to stay up to date on our journalism as it comes in. As always, thanks for listening.